like if you waited all week for a slice of cake. I wait that week, I want a big ass slice of cake. You know what I mean? Like. Hello, Addison.
Billy, I think I need financial compensation from Taylor Sheridan for this episode. I was a little wreck. A wreck.
You need to be compensated for your emotions.
Absolutely. For the therapy I will not have to be attending because of this last episode.
What was the scene? We'll get to trivia in just a second, but just real quick, like what was the Addison just lost it, ugly crying scene?
Julia Schlafer, Harrison Ford, Alex had just had the baby and they have that tender moment and he is the ultimate father figure role to her. And I was just so sad the way that I'm like, Alex, he will never know. Jacob will never know Alex in full. And I lost it.
I wish they had more time with her. Like, I know we're going to get into this, but there's so much about like how that all wrapped up that I just wish was a little different.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get there. Lots to say, certainly. People did as well. Like the comments, like out of the gate, were just like, it was like a waterfall of comments. People wanted to talk about this show. So got a lot of fan reaction to get to in this episode as well.
Let's get to trivia first. I don't even remember what last week's was at this point.
We'll do a last week's and then we'll do a new trivia for this week's episode because I want to come back next week and mm-hmm. have our traditional grading episode. We'll bring Sterling Whitaker in. We'll do a grading season 2 of 1923 episode. But trivia this week, as always, for one of the Y Collection t-shirts at tasteofcountrystore.com, where we're having an amazing flash sale. The question was, what were Jack Dutton's final words? Do you know?
Yeah, well, I don't remember verbatim, but I think I thought that it was like, I'm second best. I'm something like that.
Yep. I'm a close second was the last thing he said. And then Clyde shoots him and he says, if you're second, I ain't too worried about the first. And shoots him again in the head.
I just thought that was so dumb of Jack. I'm like, you idiot. You don't say that. Even if you don't think he's a bad guy. Stupid.
Stupid, stupid, stupid.
Yeah, exactly.
Big congratulations to Matt, first in at staff@tasteofcountry.com. That's the email address. That's the first person in who's the winner. He's a first-time winner today, and he gets one of those Y Collection t-shirts. I'll be happy to send that along to him. I've already reached out to him, so we'll get that turned around fairly quickly.
This week's episode, this week's trivia hit me.
Yep. I struggled. I struggled hard to find a good trivia question for this week. I was way deep in the weeds on some things. I even read a full, 4,000 word Timothy Dalton interview, which gave me nothing.
The dedication for that. Good job, Billy. I would not have done that.
Yeah, it was a struggle. So I ended up with this, and it's a hard one. I ain't going to lie, but it's a pretty good one, I think, especially given that we're a country music website doing mm-hmm. a 1923 Yellowstone franchise podcast. Robert Patrick played Sheriff McDowell on 1923, and he is a well-known actor. He's been in a ton of films and television shows. Most famously, he was part of Terminator 2. However, he has a country music connection. What was his role in a very famous award-winning biopic? No way you know.
There's no way I know that.
If anybody just knows off the top of their head, I mean, good on ya.
You get two
shirts.
That's
amazing. Well, I'm not going to promise that, but I mean, that is pretty impressive. But if you kind of go through his catalog, you can kind of put the parts together, pieces together, pretty easily.
I don't even know where to start. If I'm being honest, there's so much to unpack and it's a little overwhelming.
Well, let me ask this question here. Now, the way we watched this week was a little different. You watched early because mm-hmm. you had to talk to Julia Schlafer and Spencer Dutton, and that was a fantastic interview. We're going to tag that on to the end of this episode. So what did you watched like
Brendan
5 days prior, right?
Yeah, I watched it. What, those interviews were last Thursday? So something I think that. I, or something like that. And I watched like Wednesday. Yeah, essentially a week.
Okay. I watched Sunday night, and I was like trying to avoid spoilers for the better part of the week. You were just dying to tell me things, and I had to like.
I know. It was.
I was like holding a cross, and you were a vampire.
I know. Like, I just needed someone to just like understand and empathize with me. And as I'm sitting in bed watching it, and tears are strolling down my face, I'm like, I can't not talk about this.
How has the show, how has that episode held up in your mind in the 5 days since?
Oh, I still am emotionally wrecked by it. I think, and I say this with a lot of confidence, I think it is one of the best written episodes of a television show that I've seen in a long time. I'm not saying all of 1923. I'm saying just specifically episode 7. The acting, I think Julia Schlafer, if she does not get some type of award, is it the Emmys that are also TV, television?
Yeah, there's Emmys, but then there's also like the Screen Actor Guild's awards. There's all sorts of things.
She needs to get something because she is a phenomenal actress.
I agree with the acting. She is great. I thought Jerome Flynn as Banner Creighton was fantastic.
Yeah, I agree.
Helen Mirren as Kara Dutton, awesome. Honestly, for what it's worth, I thought Timothy Dalton's acting was good. Despicable, but good. I thought he was very good. I didn't. The writing has started to bother me in the days since. I have problems with some of the things that happened that at the time I was swept up in the emotions. It's like when you start dating someone new, you're just swept up in the emotions of it. And then about 3 months in, you start thinking, huh, that's kind of curious that he still calls his mom mommy. You know, those little red flags that kind of.
Should we jump into the red flags? I do have one, just like the thing that is still marinating in my head is like, I'm a little confused why ultimately Alex had to die. I mean, we can talk about
it. Yes. Let's start there.
Okay, let's start there. Do you want, should I just start with my like confusion or just like what I've been pondering?
Okay. Well, quick recap of what went down, I guess, for those who maybe just listen to this podcast or have amnesia. The cold gets the better of her. She gets frostbite, gangrene. Spencer's train drives by the car she's stuck in. He sees her. They're reunited. She ends up back on the train, taken to the hospital, and is told that she has to lose both feet, one of her hands. And in doing so, she'll end up losing the baby because of those surgeries. She chooses not to have the surgeries and accept her death, and that saves the baby's life. Is that a pretty accurate summarization?
Yes. And so that's where two things. One, I felt like it was such a stretch that the train just happened to pass by the car that she lit on fire to get the train's attention. Like that felt like we were deep in 1923 and Taylor Sheridan forgot that he has to somehow have Spencer and Alex cross paths. And so that was a way to have them cross paths. So step one, that frustrated me. I don't know if it frustrated you, but I was like, this is so implausible.
I noticed it, certainly. And I did think it was implausible, but I was willing to accept that. Like, because like it's TV, it's film, there's going to be miracles like that. Mm-hmm. That's going to happen. That's going to be part of the story. So like, it was a Dutton family miracle. Okay, let's roll with it. I was rolling. I was happy with it.
The second issue that I have, and I guess I just don't fully, and granted, I've never gone through childbirth, so I preface all this, but when Alex has the baby, she holds him for a little bit before they're like, hey, we really need to go get you into surgery, and she says no. The baby is alive at that point, so I think I was confused how her having surgery would terminate the child.
And I don't know the answer to that because she only lives another 12 hours tops. And like those first 12 hours aren't, I mean, they're critical, but like the next 12 after that are also very critical. And to not have a mother, then it would seem the baby would be just at risk. And no, they didn't do anything to like help the baby. There was no like NICU or
bingo
or anything like that. They just kind of gave her the baby and left, which maybe that's how it worked in the 1920s. I really have no idea. But no one seemed concerned about the baby after that. Like, it was just a given that the baby was going to be okay with a little bit of Aunt Kara's goat milk.
Which kind of confused by that one. But yeah, so I think for me, I was like, why? I feel like she could have lived and kept the baby. At the same time, I understood. I was like, it felt selfish that she was wanting to die. In the sense of, I hear, like today, if someone lost, if they were a W amputee on the legs, like, we have the technology to have a prosthetic, to have, you know, these different things where in 1923, I don't know if they had, you know, maybe a makeshift type of prosthetic that she could walk again. But I had a really hard time not feeling selfish of, like, yes, you would not have your both legs and loss of one foot, but I mean, loss of one hand, but you would be there physically for your child. I just had a hard time feeling like that wasn't not selfish of Alex.
So if they had sold the idea that she needed to be with that baby for the next few days in order for that baby to survive, and she was truly sacrificing herself for the baby, that would have made a lot more sense. But that didn't really seem to be the case. It wasn't a very good sell on that. So you're right. Her decision did seem kind of like, well, I just don't want to live like that. Sorry, Spencer.
Yeah.
Here's your child. Best of luck to you. So while emotional, yeah, it was kind of a confusing thing that I sort of, that whole sequence was like, huh.
Mm-hmm.
That was sort of, and the baby, I mean, I don't know what they used for a, 6-month preemie there, but it wasn't the most realistic. Like, they should have just wrapped the baby up fully so that we didn't have to, like, kind of look at that doll head, because that was kind of, it looked like Mattel might have sponsored the scene.
The AI for that one, I was like, we did a better job with the wolf than we did for this preemie baby.
I don't even think it was computer generated. I think it was a physical doll of some sort.
No, it was. No. It looked... Yeah. Billy, you and we I've already figured out we very differently when it comes to AI things. You thought the wolf was real. I didn't. I don't think – please comment. Please send in comments. I want to know, did you think the baby was real or not? I think it's AI generated.
No, I
didn't. How it moved.
Well, maybe when it was moving, maybe, but just later when it was just kind of in her – it wasn't moving for a lot of it. It was just sleeping.
I still think it was AI generated, but alas, that's not a hill that we need to die on today. The other part that wrecked me was when, so Jacob, like we had mentioned before, Jacob is there because he has a previous bullet wound that is now bleeding again, that he needs medical attention. So that's why he's there with Alex, because Spencer goes back to defend the Dutton home. And yeah, that scene of Jacob kind of comes in as her adversary of saying, stop, she is going to hold on to the baby, stop trying to take it from her. They have a really tender moment. And then you see Spencer eventually come and they kind of swap places, and then Kara comes. And I think what wrecked me is it's like I feel like Kara and Jacob had this potential of so much love to give for Alex, and we're never going to see that come to fruition.
I thought the scene between Kara and Jacob, where he describes Alex as a shooting star that could talk. And even before that, I think he describes her in a really complimentary way. He seemed to have some time to really get to know her, which was nice to know. That scene and the final scene of Spencer and Alex dancing in the afterlife. Those scenes were far more emotional to me than the ones you describe. That hit more. I think I kind of wondered in the moment how much time Jacob had with Alex, and I sure hope she had a chance to tell someone her story. Good God. I mean, if that story is just lost out there forever and no one knows what she went through, kind of a real pretty big downer, but hopefully those details got relayed to either Spencer or Jacob somewhere along the way.
That would be a bummer. You went through hell and back and no one ever really knows, because the other two people who she told are dead.
We'll get into some family tree stuff. Yeah, rest in peace, Paul and Hillary, which that was a big bummer. And she should have done a little more, maybe taken off Hillary's coat. I don't know why she didn't do that. But anyway, we'll get into some family tree stuff later because Alex chooses to name him baby John, which it causes, I mean, it's just chaos out there in the family, in the Dutton family tree Reddit whole threads and on the YouTube. It's pandemonium out there. People do not know what to think of all this, but let's pin that just for a little bit to get some other details of this episode.
I don't know if you want to talk about Elizabeth, but that is someone who I really felt like, you know, we have these scenes about Alex that she's a shooting star, you know, all these different things. And then Elizabeth, she ends with, okay, my husband's dead or my fiance's dead. So see ya, I'm going back, which we predicted. But the conversation with Kara, I mean, was a little bit tart and not as lovey-dovey as I expected. I mean, Kara was pretty much like, you'll forget about him. I won't, but you will. Yep. Goodbye. And I was okay.
Yep.
Huh.
A number of people on our YouTube comments and in the email inbox agree with you that there wasn't as much compassion given for Elizabeth, given that she lost Jack. I thought Kara showed some measure of sadness about Jack's death. But she certainly wasn't. We never saw her break down in tears, which was a surprise. She was much more emotional for Alex, a woman that she had never met before.
I know. I was like, that sucks.
You know what it reminds me of? You remember that scene from Yellowstone? It was season 5 where Beth comes into the kitchen and Summer's standing there. And she goes, oh, shoot. I forgot about you. And we kind of joked how that was like really Taylor Sheridan going, oh, shoot. I forgot about Summer. And they had to kind of figure out what to do with Summer for the rest of that episode. I feel like Elizabeth and Jack were a little like that. Like they didn't really know what to do with them this season. And like, they just kind of floundered. They gave her a wolf, a wolf attack. Jack didn't really do anything other than die. And even like reading interviews with Michelle Randolph, like she was even like unclear what becomes of her character. Maybe felt like it was a little bit, she was trying to be very kind and not speak ill of Taylor Sheridan. And maybe that's what's really in her heart. But I kind of sensed some frustration that she wished that had played out a little bit more. She confirmed that Elizabeth is still pregnant. So I guess she moves away and has that baby. But we just never really got any sort of movement in that plot line.
See, that was the part that was confusing for me when I interviewed Michelle Randolph. We didn't have enough time because she was paired with Amina Nieves and it was Michelle. And so you can only, you know, get through so many questions when you have 5 minutes to talk to both of them collectively. But I did have that. I mean, I left that episode and I'm glad that other outlets kind of confirmed what I was curious about is, yeah, we leave the last episode not knowing if Elizabeth is pregnant or not. And I think that's why I was so confused by Kara's turned off mentality towards Elizabeth, because right. I was like, there's still part of your nephew that is with Elizabeth if she is still pregnant. So it's not like you can just forget about her.
People want to know if that baby's going to come back around somehow, going to show up in whatever prequel is next. I'm thinking probably not. I don't think anybody from that group is going to speak fondly of their time in Montana. So that baby probably isn't going to want to return.
Okay, the only thing that I thought was interesting, and granted, Taylor Sheridan works on a lot of television shows outside of the Yellowstone universe, but I don't know if you listened yet to my Michelle Randolph interview in full, but she, when I asked her what did she steal from set, she was like, ah, crud, am I not sentimental? I didn't steal anything, yada, yada, yada. But then she goes, I'm working with whoever the I don't know if it's like the wardrobe or someone who
wardrobe director.
Yeah. She's like, oh, I'm working with whatever the gal's name is on something else that maybe I can get stuff from her. So I was like,
I assume she meant Landman.
Oh.
Maybe she just didn't want us to know that Landman was currently filming.
But we know that because I thought it might be 1923. A spinoff related, only because I feel like they've pretty publicly asked for extras in Fort Worth and stuff for Landman. So it's pretty obvious we're getting a season two.
Yeah. Well, the big action, I think, and the most satisfying part for me was Spencer finally having that gunfight we wanted him to see. He finally arrives and saves the day, and saves the ranch, really, when he comes flying in. I mean, he looked like a superhero. When he comes in with that elephant gun, he just starts blowing people away. He's got two guns at one point, and he's like, John Wayne out there on a horse, pow, 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 and the whole thing's over. They spent a day fighting off these bad guys. Spencer Dutton comes in and takes care of it in about 17 seconds.
I know. It felt a little implausible because there was a point where I was like, they are so outnumbered. And then I was thinking, really? Could really one guy come in and take them out?
I was okay with it.
I know. I was too. But logistically wise, I was like, could this happen in real life?
He came from behind too, you know, so he had the element of surprise and he had a few men with him that helped out. So all of a sudden the bad guys were getting attacked from two different angles. It really probably did tilt the scales. I thought the more unrealistic gunfight was the one at the train station because it seemed like all the bad guys got shot, but none of the good guys got killed. And there wasn't any sort of barrier between them. It's just, Banner's men were terrible shots, I guess.
I was also thinking that. I was like, the odds that not one good guy died is a little suspicious, which I think we should go there. I think we go to the train station scene next.
We find out this was a plot twist, because we had long been suspecting that Banner was going to turn on Whitfield. It happened, but not quite in the way that we thought it would. He ended up not really going after Banner directly. He tries to move his family to Portland. Through coincidence, ends up at the same train station at the same time as Spencer's coming home. And realizes he's going to be right in the middle of a gunfight, but kind of redeems himself a little bit with Jacob Dutton.
I really liked that scene because I wanted to like Banner, and or at least wanted to feel like if he died, I would feel closure with his character in a positive way. And he ends up helping Jacob Dutton. He kills Clyde, your poor buddy Clyde. And at the very end, Jacob comes and stands over him and pretty much says, hey, I will help. I will help get your family to Portland. Y'all, Billy decided on top of his headphones to put on his bowler cap, paper newsboy hat.
Yeah.
That is very
Clyde cap, I think is what I'm going to call it now.
To Brian Conowall's hat. Billy, I'll let you speak more to this one since it involves your favorite friend.
Well, Clyde ended up being kind of a non-factor. He just showed up, shot. I think he's the one that actually shot Sheriff McDowell, but he tries to hide before Banner pops him and kills him. And then Jacob has a really nice moment with Banner where Banner redeems himself, and to the degree that's possible. And as I sort of think about this, it connects with something I thought of at the very end of this episode of the finale, but how much Tiona's storyline sort of paralleled Spencer and Alex's. And I don't just mean that they happened at the same time. Like they kind of went through a lot of the same obstacles, were kind of searching for the same things. And in some ways, Banner was like Father Raynaud, at first an adversary who tormented Tiona and Jacob, but at the end, in the eyes of the public anyway, there's some sort of redemption, whereas Marshall Kent and Whitfield end up being the real bad guys. And then they're both killed. So that was kind of interesting. I don't really think it means anything necessarily. I just think there was some of the same plot elements in both storylines.
Yeah, I don't have much to say to that one.
it was a good... I thought Spencer would be a little more involved in the gunfight. He really wasn't too much. He's mostly on the train with his wife, which is fine. But from there, they hijack the sheriff's car and get to the ranch.
But I think not having him be a part of the train station gunfight as much made it even more epic when he did show up in the way that he did at the Dutton Ranch.
The whole season two, though, was just so much waiting and a very short amount of payoff. And I think, to me, I'll always remember it for that. Like, it was a lot of work up for just a teeny tiny sliver. It's like if you waited all week for a slice of cake and then you ended up with just a little tiny slice of cake. I wait that week. I want a big ass slice of cake. You know what I mean? Like,
you and your analogies get me every time.
Yeah.
I am bummed that Brendan Sklinner, also fun fact, you say Brendan Sklinner. You know it's Brandon, right? I've noticed that.
Yeah, I think I confuse him with Miranda Lambert's husband, who's Brendan.
For sure, it looked the same.
Yeah, the other toned
up. Both good-looking guys. In our life.
Brendan Sklinner. Hey, I figured out how to spell Julia Schlaefer. Don't test me on Brandon Sklinner.
That's fair. Schlaefer, that's important. I mean, that's impressive. What was I going to say about him, though? Oh, I am bummed, which I get it. He was telling me, he's like, you know, laws and stuff, gun laws, which I guess in my head, I kind of felt like maybe it was more like a prop gun, but it was clearly an actual gun that would have to be registered. But I was kind of bummed that he didn't get to take the gun. I mean, I just feel like it is such a, which I get it. There's laws and there's probably certification. There's a lot that goes with owning that type of a gun, but I'm like, you just, for an entire season, you lugged that stupid thing around and you didn't even get to keep it.
Got his hat. At Addison's referring to
with
Brandon, which is coming in a little bit, and she asked him what they stole and he didn't get to keep the gun, but he got the hat.
He got the hat. He did get the passport.
Maybe he doesn't like guns.
Yeah, that's fair. I just more so, regardless if it's a gun or not, it's just like the one, I guess his hat also does represent that, so that's fine. I'm just thinking of the items that literally traveled with him the whole time.
So after Spencer saves the day at the ranch, mm-hmm. he goes to the hospital, says goodbye essentially to Alex, mm-hmm. Finds out, meets his baby. And from there, it's boom, right off to Whitfield's mansion because he wants to meet the guy who killed his wife. And this is causing a lot of confusion for people, is why Brandon or why Spencer blames Donald Whitfield personally for the death of his wife, Alex.
Here's what my two cents are, because I've lost a lot of sleep over this because I didn't fully understand. I'm like, but he didn't cause her death. My only thought is really from the very beginning, the whole reason why Spencer is hustling back home is because he knows things are bad and he needs to defend the ranch. So I guess if there was never this urgency to get home, they could have maybe gone, they could have lingered a little bit more, is my only two cents. I don't know.
Yeah. No, but that's absolutely the reason. If Banner and Whitfield hadn't attacked the Duttons in that episode where they kill him in the yard and tried to start taking the ranch, mm-hmm. then Spencer and Alex would still probably be in Africa somewhere, right? Frolicking, ravaging each other all over the Sahara Desert or the whatever, Serengeti. So much happened between then and now that blaming Whitfield, I think, is a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
But he was distraught. He needs to go blame somebody. So I was okay with it. But yeah, people didn't. I mean, to say Whitfield, there's no way Donald Whitfield could be tried and accused and convicted of Alex of Sussex's murder.
You know who I'm glad died? And I hate to say that, outside of Whitfield, his lover,
Lindy.
Mindy. Gosh, I was like, you're so freaking annoying. Praise God.
Yep, I agree. And that was a little underwhelming too. She just sort of gets shot. And then they let Mabel go. I don't know how Spencer knew to let the other woman go, but he does. And that was a little bit of it. Here's the thing that bothered me most about that scene. They burned the mansion down.
Yeah. Yeah.
His Donald Whitfield's mansion, that was the same. You can't tell me that wasn't the same house that Governor John Dutton dies in Yellowstone season 5.
It was.
The same driveway, the same pillars. It's painted a little bit differently, but now they're burning it down. Very, very confused.
Yeah. I have nothing else to say, but yeah.
There's a lot of yeahs on that one. Understandable, because that's about all I got two on it. It's like, huh? That's a head tilter.
I also thought it was interesting how they end. I don't know if we want to go there, because then I guess then we'd have to talk about the family tree potentially. But really starting finally, do you remember when, gosh, this was several episodes ago where you had said, you're like, we've never seen on the Dutton Ranch, like any of the brand, anything. And finally, in this last episode, we see the barn, the white barn that we see all throughout Yellowstone, finally, with the Y branding on it. It took us the entire season to be able to see that.
Yep, I noticed that as well. Before we get to Elsa's speech and sort of her recap or sort of catch up a little bit on what became of Spencer, all of this, after all of this happened, did you notice that Spencer's wife and Spencer's mom died the same way?
Childbirth?
No, frostbite.
Oh, frostbite. To be honest, I don't remember how Spencer's mom died. So, that's so
Spencer's
what I was like.
Mom is Margaret Dutton, Faith Hill, and they're in a flashback scene of 1923, or actually, I think it's an Elsa voiceover scene. Yeah, yeah, it's that first Elsa voiceover where she's talking about how her father died, and a year later, her mother froze to death.
Oh, interesting.
After writing a letter to Jacob and Kara, Jacob and Kara come and find Spencer and John freezing. And so, yeah, they both die because they essentially freeze to death.
I want to talk about, I feel they try to put a bow on the end of all this by giving us a very brief, literally less than probably 60 second synopsis of here's what the rest of Spencer's life looks like. Sans Alex, digested in 60 seconds, ready, set, go.
Yeah, it took 6 episodes to get 6 months, but we covered the next 45 years in about 90 seconds.
Which, it was interesting. So we learned that Spencer never remarries again, but he, quote, per Elsa's commentary, took to the comfort of a widow and had another child. What a G way to say that.
Yep.
took to the comfort of another widow. But he was adamant that he would never marry her. And then one day she just disappeared.
Right.
But they so casually said that statement. But in my head, I'm like, wait a second. So there's another Dutton running around there somewhere.
It's like when you're trying to deliver someone bad news and you just sort of slip it in amongst of other things and hope that maybe they won't fixate on it.
Uh-huh.
But obviously they don't know their audience, because that was all I wanted to talk about afterwards. It's like, oh, he did he? Like,
there's another offspring running around there.
Right. What would be the purpose of that if we weren't going to see this kid somewhere down the line?
It would be very odd if they decided just to shoehorn that in. That would be one that I would be a little bitter about. There's some things that I'm like, don't worry about it. I'm going to sleep at night. That one just felt too forced for it not to show up somewhere else.
That's not to say that hasn't happened before. We have Ned, Chance, and Patience Dutton that have been kind of put in the family graveyard along the way, and we've never gotten an explanation for that. All those came kind of during the creation of the series, though. So you can kind of maybe just sort of plug that into, okay, Taylor Sheridan didn't exactly know what was happening. At this point, every new family member introduced, I feel, needs to have some sort of purpose on the show. We can't just throw out strays like that and expect people to be not super confused when they don't come to fruition.
I agree.
Are we in agreement, though, that the way this ended and the way that that did sort of tie a bow up on what becomes of Alex, like, we're done with 1923, right? There's no season 3.
It would be very odd if there was a season 3. It would almost feel like you're opening up a coffin that's already been closed and sealed.
100% agree. And you know, I mean, actors have kind of talked about the show in the way that indicates that the show is done. You know, we're moving on now to Spencer's life, I feel like, and Spencer. And I feel like that's going to be the plot line for 1944 if it comes to be. And also to Harrison Ford, Helen Mirren, they're in their 80s. Like, how many more seasons can you kind of bank on with them in a starring role at this point? they can't give us a season three of 1923. It would just be, it would be a real head tilter.
It'd be odd and forced, or my thoughts on that.
So the random Spencer kid is super interesting, and the widow, and who is this widow? But I guess maybe there's probably a number of widows in Montana, I guess, at that point. It's the singles dating scene, it's probably not a real stocked pond, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, well, yeah, or maybe the widowed pond is a little more. I mean, think about it. If any of those bad guys at the train station had a family, got a lot of widows lying around now.
That's a fairly good point. Like, all of a sudden, there's just a lot more women than there are men to sort of...
I'm just saying.
It's good to be a single man in Bozeman, Montana in 1924. Just
23, or I guess, yeah, 24.
You just, I mean, why stop at one widow? Take comfort in half of Banner's arms.
I hate that. I want to move on.
Spencer Dutton probably, you know, anyway, okay. So I had another question with regards to all this as well. Was we get to that flash forward sequence of 1969, which shout out to IMDb, who had that plugged into their site weeks ago. There was going to be some 1969 Spencer. What did you learn from that? Like, it was him laying next to Alexandra's grave and either falling asleep and or dying there.
I didn't learn anything from that. The only thing I took away from that is that he loved her so deeply he could never truly move on to someone else. That's truly all I took from that.
He had two legs, though.
Wait. Oh, that's... See, here's plot holes that I just, like, kind of forget about, and then you don't, and then I'm re-reminded. Because, yeah, Elsa, one of her commentaries is that one of her brothers lost a leg, right? Or one of the... Not her brother, sorry.
No, it was John Dutton in Yellowstone season 4 refers to his grandfather as lost the leg. So it could have been the other grandfather, you know, his mom's dad. Or, and here we go.
The dang family tree exhausted.
Let's get into it.
I'm exhausted.
Let's get into it.
Let's get into it. I'm so excited. It just is like... It's just one of those of like when you have to go to math class and you have to work out the times table and all that, and you don't want to, but you have to get to the end result. That's how I feel about the family tree. We have to talk about it. I know it's important, but gosh darn it, it exhausts me.
Well, I'll keep it brief. I don't think as we understand it right now, if we're to believe that the John Dutton that was born from Alexandra, if that is Kevin Costner's father, there's no way around the whole seven generations theory and other things we've learned about John Dutton being the fifth generation, all that being bad information. Like, none of that paid off. They just skipped a generation somewhere in there. And there's no reason to be anything but kind of frustrated with that if you're a fan who enjoys this kind of things. Because it's six. From James Dutton to Tate Dutton is six generations. There's no way around that, I don't think. There's some creative explanations for how we do that. Maybe they're a lot of not sort of nonsense, but it just seems like that was forgotten. So the only other explanation is that this John Dutton has another baby named John, and then that's the Dabney Coleman character. But good Lord, that's a lot of Johns. Why so many Johns?
Yeah. Gosh, if I were Taylor Sheridan, it would be kind of sticky trying to keep up with this family tree.
Yes, it would be. So why make it even more confusing? By adding Jacob Dutton and like all these different generations of John Dutton. Like, I agree with you.
Yeah, and it's like, why add that 2 cents about the widow and that she didn't have to have a kid?
Right.
Just saying.
Yes. Yes. Elizabeth didn't have to get pregnant.
Yeah. Which, yeah. And just the fact that we never learn that if she's going to have a baby or not, if she's actually still pregnant, yada, yada, yada. Ugh.
Where do we stand with the next prequel, I guess, is the big question people want to know, too. Like, what is that going to look like? Because people have immediately started turning to 1944. That was announced as a thing that's happened. But I'm of the mindset, like, till we see it, I'm not totally believing it.
Absolutely. Just like we had false hope for the Four Sixes Ranch. Until I physically see that, you know, we get a screener or something, it doesn't exist in my mind yet.
I 100% agree. And the big thing to kind of keep in mind out there in the world is Paramount right now is being sold. So like the new owners could have totally new plans or a totally new vision. They could kick Taylor Sheridan to the curb. Like there's a lot that could go wrong before 1944 kind of comes to fruition. So like naturally it would seem, and I think Brendan Sklenner even in the interview said that like he's heard of this 1944. He thinks it's happening. He'd love to be a part of it. I'm not banking on that for the same reason as we can't bank on the Four Sixes. There's just too much out there that hasn't happened now that you have to, you know, it's a, what's the saying? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not going to be once bitten, twice shy, to quote.
Once Alex. Bitten and twice shy.
you did the, who sang that song? The country song.
I don't know how you were about to tie me into whatever you're about to say, but okay.
Well, you went to a different lyric. What song was that from that you just sang?
Oh.
Taylor Swift. I don't know. Right? Was that a Taylor Swift song?
Tasha, you kept my distance, but you still catch my... Oh, yes. It's a Christmas one from... Tell me, baby, did you recognize me? Man, it's been a year. It doesn't surprise me. Face of a lover. Okay, anyways, people weren't here to hear me sing.
I was thinking of the other song by... Great White. It's Great White, isn't it?
Dukes, I have no clue.
Once bitten, twice shy, baby. You know what song? Okay. Bit of a sidetrack there.
Staff@tasteofcountry.com is where you can leave your thoughts on episode 7. And yeah, what are your thoughts just on how everything ended between the narration of Spencer Dutton at the end by Elsa, from Elizabeth leaving kind of abruptly? Like, that wasn't a warm and fuzzy moment. Were you satisfied by by Alex's death? Let us know. Staff@tasteofcountry.com.
We're going to do our grading 1923 season 2 episode next week. And we'll also have your interview with Brendan Sklenner and Julia Schlaper following this. And then maybe we plug the Amina Nieves, Michelle Randolph interview into next week's podcast. Does that work for you?
That works for me. I want to just be real life friends with them. That's an aside that really is not important. But after interviewing them, the whole cast is such a delight.
They were. 100%. Like, I think every cast member we've talked to from 1923 has just been really kind and generous with their time. Mm-hmm. And we haven't always gotten that necessarily. Not that anybody's always ever been rude, but I think certain actors have just been... Well, Cole Hauser, I think, is one that comes to mind. He's just a little standoffish, maybe not... particularly interested in giving information or mm-hmm. great answers. But we got total the opposite from the cast in 1923.
And you just never know. I mean, I was one of, let's say, 30 interviewees that day. And so you're just regurgitating the same stuff over and over again to a degree, because you're all talking about 1923. You're going to have overlap in questions. And so I did appreciate... they were conversing as if it was the first time they've talked about it.
Yep. And that makes a big difference and is noticed. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Q&A, Billy. I have some for us if that's all you have on the fateful episode 7.
Let's see what we got today. I know the reaction to this show was intense and opinions are strong. And I was excited to kind of include Q&A for this week. So what are the people saying?
The first one is my favorite. It's from Matthew, who says, as a competitive shooter, I was impressed with Kara's aim. I call her Helen Headshot.
Helen Headshot.
I love it.
Yeah. I did a little peek because I was wondering if that gun she used was also Margaret Dutton's gun from 1883. Yep. Different gun. Mm-hmm. Not the same. Looks similar. Different gun. But, I mean, Kara took care of business elsewhere in the show. It wasn't surprising to me that she could shoot a gun. Her aim being that good was... really, and her confidence was amazing.
Impressive.
But, man, she was just really a badass. Like, people think Beth came from Alex. I thought Beth came from Kara, which I know she didn't, but they seemed to share a lot of personality traits.
I agree. The next one is from Shannon, who says, in today's Dutton Rules podcast, you mentioned that the Beth and Rip spinoff was still in the let's think about it phase and that the Casey Dutton CBS spinoff was a go per Puck reporting. However, per the same Puck reporting that stated that Beth and Rip were in pre-production already. Additionally, it was reported by them back a few weeks ago that they were slated for summer filming and were actively looking for a new cast. Do you have information that contradicts that? Puck is pretty spot on with their Yellowstone reporting.
I do not. And this kind of goes to what we're speaking of. So the Beth and Rip podcast is another series that is reported. And then Casey Dutton maybe getting a series on CBS. Like, Puck is reporting what they know and what they've heard. And they have been very good. But things change and have changed really quickly in this universe. So no, I'm not contradicting Puck. I don't get inside information at all on like new shows. That's just not the world we live in. You're best to trust like Variety, Deadline, and Puck, who have been on top of it there. We're just in a lot of ways aggregating that information. I just know things change. That's why I'm skeptical about all of this. So the Beth and Rip show, we'll see. You know, when is it going to happen? I don't know. The Madison show seems to be firm. That's the only one. If I was to bet on one show, I'd bet on Madison, which is the Michelle Pfeiffer program, which I think is pretty far removed from the Yellowstone universe. It just kind of takes place in the same setting, I think.
The next one I have for us is from Kevin, who says, I appreciate the time and effort you put into your coverage of 1923, but I want to express my disappointment with the lack of critical discussion on the drastic decline in writing quality for season two. While season one was a strong and compelling addition to the Yellowstone universe, this season has been riddled with filler, nonsensical storytelling, and questionable character decisions.
I don't disagree with Kevin's opinion. It's been a lesser season than season one. But here's the fine line we sort of try to walk. Fans of the show listen to us and watch this. And I think fans overwhelmingly have a strong opinion of how it went. To that end, we did a poll of like grade the season finale, and like over 80% of the people gave it an A or a B grade. In the comment section, you know, maybe 200, 300 comments, the majority were pretty critical of it. It was the people who did not like the show that spoke up far more than the ones who truly loved it. So I want to respect the majority opinion here because, you know, that's who's listening and watching. And I also just don't want to sound like a hater week after week. No one enjoys someone who's like just banging on a show. I've thought this show was better than most shows on television. You know, I watch Blue Bloods is a show I've watched pretty much religiously since it started. That's a fine show. It's okay. It is what it is. It's not going to win any awards. This is much better than that. The writing has suffered at times throughout the season. Yeah. And I'll be honest, when we get to the grading section, I also wanted to see the full season play out before I sort of gave a critical take.
But we didn't know what was to come.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, I just don't want to be banging on a show week after week and then have to sort of backtrack as something great happens. I thought it was a good show. I'll get to my opinion next week, I think, but a lot of the criticism that people have expressed is merited, I think.
Two more for us. This next one is from Todd, who says, wonderful show on its own, but after hammering us through three effing shows about seven generations, Sheridan just pissed on my coat and told me it was raining. Wow, that is quite the imagery and vivid picture you just painted, Todd. It's kind of a lot.
This is the family tree anger. And he's not alone.
Which I don't blame his frustration. Yeah.
Our friend Gorilla in the Mist on YouTube, who was emailed, has kind of a similar frustration with sort of this turn of events. And there's ways that the seven generations theory can still play out. But my gosh, is it ever murky? Like, why not just stick to the seven generations? You put it out there. I don't know. A lot of questions.
And it's not as if he thinks, oh, people just won't remember, because it's such an integral part that,
I told you. Does he have no awareness of like what people are talking about with regards to his show? Is he just living in a bubble with blinders on where he's like, oh, I bet you people won't notice this? It's like, then dude, you need people to tell you what people are noticing and talking about, because That's a big problem.
I told you I saw him recently from afar at an event I went to in Nashville, and there was so much. I'm like, if it was just appropriate to go over there and talk to him, and I have so many questions for this man, and he is finally in like eyesight. I'm like, ah, let me at him.
I liked your takeaway. Like, what's he like? Short. Oh,
okay. I said short king.
short king. Keith Urban.
Like, as I know, Keith Urban tall, and okay. I'm a little shorter than Keith Urban, and I'm 5'5".
Okay.
Yeah, you chew on that while I get to our last question. Our last question says, was that widow's last name Randall?
So this is Garrett Randall.
Oh.
Wondering if somehow – see, this is kind of – we encourage the craziest of conspiracy theories, so I'm not going to knock this particular one because certainly we've had weirder theories through the years on this program. But I do not think – that it's all going to circle back around and like the widow is a Randall and maybe somehow Jamie. This baby is Garrett Randall.
Yeah, no, that like, feels a little far-fetched.
I think the word you're looking for is incestual, which isn't quite, that's the word that comes to mind for me. Like it feels like.
I was trying not to go there.
Yeah, it feels a little weird. Like I, yeah. We won't get into that, but no, I think probably it's its own thing that might come around somehow in 1944, but maybe that's how we get to the seven generations. Who knows?
Well, y'all, I hope you can sleep well tonight because Billy and I will still not be sleeping too well, but remember that staff@tasteofcountry.com is where you can leave anything that you've been chewing on recently. Our trivia question, we're coming back. Well, at the end of this episode, we're going to have my interview with Julia Schlafer and Brendan Sklinner. As well as I had some. Oh, next week we're grading 1923.
Yep, Amina Nieves and Michelle Randolph there, and big thanks to everybody for listening. I mean, we've had the largest audiences I think we've had on just the audio portion of the podcast, largest audiences we've had in years. And then you throw in sort of the expanded YouTube coverage we've done, which has often been in the hundreds of thousands with some of those videos. It's just really enjoyed the sort of back and forth. That probably if you take away that conversation we've had weekly with fans. I don't know if I'm as invested with this show as I would be otherwise.
Oh, y'all. Deep sigh.
Almost to the finish line, Addison.
Almost to the Dutton Rules Yellowstone 1923 podcast is another fire-inducing Town Square Media podcast.
Dangerous.
It's spicy, and we're here to marinate in the spice.
Hey, Addison.
Brandon, you look a little tired.
No, I'm good. I'm awake. I'm super awake.
Kicking things off, I want to start with a little bit more of a lighthearted question. Did you guys steal anything from set? You spent so much time. Please tell me yes.
Yeah.
Brandon was a little klep, though. I asked permission. I was too nervous. Actually, one of the coolest things I will say is at the front of the train that that Alex runs and jumps on in episode 4, I want to say, there's a beautiful sign on the front that's like on the front of the train. It says like New York Central, you know, and I walked on a set and it's like huge. And I was like, that is the most beautiful sign I've ever seen. It was like twinkling in the dark. And my director was like, do you want it? And I was like, and so the lighting crew like rigged it up for me, put a dimmer on it, and they gifted it to me. So that's hanging in my house now. That's pretty cool. And then we both got to keep our wedding rings.
Oh, wait. Yeah.
What did you steal?
Yeah. Well, I got his hat. I got Spencer's hat, his passport, his smoky pouch, which was this is a tragic story, but I was left it in an Uber in New York City, and then the whole thing. And the pouch is gone. I shed a tear over it. But trying to not smoke anymore anyway, so that's probably for the best. And then my chair, actually.
So gun. We didn't take the gun.
No, No, I did not take the gun. It's hard to take the gun. It's laws or something. I don't know, something dumb like that. But the chair though, instead of like the chair back, because they're the same chair the whole time, I was like, hey, can I get the entire chair with the chair back? Because I've had the same chair the entire time, and it's beat to hell. And they've sent me the chair. So in my office, I have my entire chair from that I sat in on set all the time. And that means a lot to me. Yeah.
Y'all, I genuinely at the end of episode 7 was in full on sobbing. And I don't necessarily cry during stuff like this. I mean, full on sobbing. And something that I thought about is, you know, we see season 1 and y'all are together the whole time, and then two real years essentially pass before now we're on board, we're shooting season 2. You guys aren't together until the very end. So kind of walk me through, what does that look like for when it comes to like chemistry building? Did you have to rehearse? Like, what did it look like to rebuild this chemistry that you guys had started season 1, but then like you are not seeing each other for a hot minute? Whoever wants to start
I
first.
mean, we didn't at all. Yeah.
I think like when we first met, it was there. We never really, like, obviously it was built up over time because we spent so much time together season 1, but it was, we got so lucky that the chemistry just existed off the bat. And so we showed up to work that day to film the reunion scene and
Yeah.
said, "Hey, how have you been?" And we were back and
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, guy kind of knows what he's doing, you know, and I think he's an intuitive, you know, for as masculine as he is as a human being, he's incredibly sensitive and incredibly intuitive, and it's in his writing, and it's also in his casting, and he trusts his gut, and he obviously, we didn't chemistry read, we didn't
Wow.
meet each other, and he clearly could tell that there it would work, and it does, and it did, and yeah, so we didn't have to rehearse anything. It was just there, and it's in the writing too. I mean, his writing is just, it's kind of, as an actor, it's like working with a great play or something, like Eugene O'Neill or like Tennessee Williams or something like that, you know what I mean? It's like, it's on the page, it's just, you know, it's all there. So yeah.
Julia, the scene that I loved is with you and Harrison. And I know last time we talked, you couldn't give me any spoilers that you actually got to work with him, but we did talk about him messing with your hair when you cut it off screen. And so I want to know, filming that really tender scene, walk me through like when you and Harrison realized, okay, we're gonna have this scene together. What was it like working with him, that conversation, and how to just like really tell this on screen?
It was so beautiful and seamless, and Harrison is one of the best humans I've ever met. And so we were working so fast and furious. I think I filmed another scene that morning, and then everyone was brought in to do the birthing scene. And I was also pretty bedridden because they had to wrap my hands and legs, so I couldn't move. So I couldn't like go back to the guest chairs and sit with Harrison, but Harrison would just come to me and like he's I was so curious how he worked and how he was going to work on set because, you know, it's a legend, it's Harrison Ford. And he really, I mean, he's such a leader, but he also gave me so much space and so much kindness and grace. He really stepped in as this like fatherly figure, both for Alex and for me that day. I think I was so broken at that point because we were pretty far through the season. And I think we both just kind of connected and like we gave each other something that day that we both didn't know we needed, I think. And it's to this day one of the most special moments of my entire life, just like staring into his eyes at the end of the scene when they call cut and just like crying. And he was holding me and he just making sure I was okay as this like beautiful fatherly figure. And I don't know how to process that ever, but gosh, yeah, that was my favorite scene that we filmed this season by far. It's Harrison Ford.
Yeah, and just so deeply personal and even off the screen. Well, y'all, our time is already up, but thank you so much and truly loved. Y'all both did such a phenomenal job of acting and portraying Alex and Spencer. So excited for others to see it.
Thank you
Thanks so
so much.
much. Bye, y'all.
Thank you.